Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Dr. Guy's Gumbo Talk. Today is March 17th, 2019. And as always, I am so glad that you guys have decided to tune in. And tonight is a really good night. I think all of our show topics are hot topics, but I think this one is really going to be on fire. So as always, I would like to introduce my co-host to the show. Hey, Steve.
Hey, Dr. Guy. I think this one is going to have people excited as well as possibly in their feelings.
I don't know. It's a possibility. Hey, Stacey. Jade, how are you?
I'm doing great, Dr. Guy. I'm strapped in and ready to go.
Are you sure?
I'm 100% positive.
Oh, okay. So for those of you that are just tuning in, our show topic tonight is, do you know your sexual market value? Now, I am so excited to talk about this topic because Steve and I have talked about this on the show quite a few times, but we did not attach a name to it. We were not calling it sexual marketplace value, even though, okay, Cupid really put this out, I guess, about 10 years ago. And so we've been talking about it in terms of concepts and kind of what it means. And so tonight we're going to really focus on what sexual market value means to women, to men. How do you measure your sexual market value? And then does it impact how you date, who you marry, all those good things? So I think the first thing that we probably want to jump into is first letting everyone know that you all can join in our discussion at any time. Some of you all are listening online and others have called in, but if you are listening online, the call-in number is 914-205-5902, and all you have to do is press 1, and we will address you, and you'll be able to join in our discussion tonight. So I think what might help our listeners, you guys, is if we start off with pretty much a definition of what sexual market value is, because initially, when I started reading about sexual market value, really what came to mind for me was real estate. And so I thought about how most people, if they're selling their houses or they're buying a home, they want to determine what's the market value of this property. And so I kind of took that concept and I really thought about how it is applied to sexual market value. So we kind of want to create this definition for people. Maybe this is a new term for them. Maybe they're not familiar with it. They haven't heard it before. So how do you guys think we can help people by defining what is sexual market value?
Ms. Stacey Jade, do you have something or would you like me to go?
It's something created by me and that's a bunch of crap, but go ahead.
Okay. I may go out on a limb early and disagree 5 minutes into the show, and I'll go ahead and disagree. I think that sexual marketplace value is who you can attract as well as keep. There's one thing to attract somebody, but there's another thing to be able to, you know, keep them in a relationship or at least a long-term dating situation. I think sometimes people may mistake their ability to date someone or go out with them as their market value, where that's not really it. It's really about who you can keep.
Really?
Okay. And I know that Stacey J said she feels like it's something that was created by men, but there is a few definitions of what sexual market value is. And so some have defined it as saying it is how much value you provide to someone who you're looking for a mate for, or it's something similar to the concept of the total package. Your sexual market value, or what people are calling your SMV, is really a calculation of your sexual worth to a sexual partner.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of how it's been defined. Now, the question is, how do individuals define for themselves their own sexual market value? Well, I think that's a
real good question. No, I mean, I think that's a real good question. I think that, you know, that goes back to, you know, some of the other topics we've had on the show relative to who people want to date and why they want to target those people. Specifically, you know, we'll start with physical appearance, you know, body, dress, socioeconomic factors. All of those things play into your sexual marketplace value. So sometimes people are having problems in dating because they are trying to date someone who may be above their threshold of value.
Now, as I understand this, isn't this only based off of age and worth as to it relates to the data, age and worth, right? And,
well, what do you
and
mean,
education.
It's a correlation.
The data
it's not only based off of age.
Well, this is where I'm getting the information that is coming in relating to the graph is age and how much you make and how much education you have is rating your sexual market value. Not what you look like, not real true characteristics of what your value is, but only 3 points that they're going to measure you on is your education, your age, and how much you make. And that's what determines what your sexual market value is.
Now, well, remember.
Definitely, the age is a component, generally speaking, and we've
and
gone over this
base
before.
And it's a component.
That
generally
speaking, we've gone over this before, that women's value is greater as they're younger, and men's value are greater as they age.
See, you
so
can't even let that flow off
is,
your tongue real good, can you see?
I'm trying to say it politically correct. So
you having a hard
so,
time with this one, huh?
No, I'm not. I'm just, like I said, I'm trying to say it in an appropriate manner. So
nice way.
I think that I think it's implied the age as we kind of try to equate physical attractiveness or beauty for that standard, if what you're trying to identify is that. That's
so
not
only young
that
people, only
quantified.
19-year-olds are young and beautiful, right?
Okay,
no,
so
we're saying
here's
that,
the thing. But here, because I know, Stacey J, as we're talking about how do you measure sexual market value, it sounds very superficial. A lot of it is very superficial. It does. Don't get me wrong. But the whole concept behind sexual market value is not what we created. It's what's been out there, at least for the last 10 years. And so the idea is that whether we like it or not, this is the reality. We live in a society that embraces youth and condemns our seasoned folks. Let's say it that
well,
way.
Well,
no, so
that's
we might not
what,
agree with that.
No.
We might not agree.
I'm sorry, that's
but
not
in
where
our
I
society.
Live.
But you're
that's
one
not
person.
Where I
We're
live.
Not talking about the land that you live in. We're talking about the masses. And for the masses, youth fails, which is why if you can turn on your TV right now, I guarantee you, you're going to see at least 10 commercials in the next 5 minutes that are talking about how to rejuvenate your youth, how to get it back. How to get the spring back, how to remove wrinkles. It's all about youth. So whether we like it or not, whether we feel like there are some awesome and amazing people in their 40s, 50s, 60s that are getting it in, that is the reality. That's true. But what is also true is that this sexual market value is real talk when they say men and women peak at different times. So for women, women peak between 21 to 25. That's their peak time.
Well,
that's when they hot as ever. That's what they're saying. This is what the literature is saying. And men peak later in their 30s, late 30s, right? And men are peaking later in their 30s because now at this time they have more to contribute to a relationship with someone. They are typically more settled in their careers. They may own their own house. Financially, they're a little bit more stable than they were in their 20s. So men and women are peaking at two different times. Whether we like that or not, that seems to be the norm and the trend.
Also, if we go into any of the lists that are generally generated by society, the sexiest man alive versus the sexiest woman alive, there's always a large age discrepancy. You know, those titles have been held by Brad Pitt, George Clooney, I believe currently it's Idris Elba, men in their late 40s or 50s. And generally speaking, the women are in their late 20s to early 30s. So, you know, I think what has kind of happened and transpired is women traditionally have been she's not on the list.
No, she's not on the list. She's on our list, but she's not on the list.
No, not on the list.
What list is y'all looking at? Because I see her on the Sexiest Women Alive. She was there.
So basically what we tend to...
which we know exists.
Yes, go
for it. So her being 60, I think there's a category for her, but generally speaking, when we talk about, you know, Esquire, People, those type of lists, she's not on there to my knowledge.
Esquire.
So when we look at men, they're generally judged as success objects, and women are generally judged as sex objects. And
but that's
with
been
that being said,
forever.
With that being said, that's generally why you'll find women on that list at a younger age.
Okay, but Steve, when have women ever been seen in any other light other than a sex object?
Well,
but they're not just saying that women are seen as sex objects for sexual market value. This is also about men being perceived based on their appearances as well. Like you talk about the taller men, you talk about the more fit men. Okay, so here's the concept. When we, like for example, if you wanted to calculate your sexual market value, they're using scales based on a scale from 1 to 10. Where you can rate yourself from 1 to 10, right? So if, and this is interesting because I ask my clients this in sessions just to get a gauge of where they are about self-worth. And I will say, on a scale from 1 to 10, how would you rate yourself? How do you feel about yourself? And this is inclusive of everything, not just career, not personal, but everything. And, you know, sometimes I'll get, oh, I'm a solid 4. I'm 7. I'm a rock solid 9. And so everyone has their own idea about where they fall on that 1 to 10 scale. That is a fact, right? I don't know anybody that doesn't already have in their head where they fall on the scale. Sexual market value is just saying you can't be a 2, male or female, and want a 9. That's what that says. So if you're a 2 and you want a 9, you're unrealistic. So you should be shooting for something that's more in your sexual value range. I'm not saying I agree with this material. I'm just telling you what's out there.
Oh, I agree wholeheartedly.
Can we dissect this first and understand
Absolutely.
That there are numerous measures of sexual market value because there are the ones that are determined based on age, how much you make, and then there are those that are determined by your online preferences. There are, because in doing research, there was too many factors that went into what makes up your sexual market value. You can determine what your sexual market value is. You know, you got others
that
will determine what
goes into it. Not that many
well,
factors.
Let's see. In doing research, just like she said, you know, there is a list that she measures her clients by, and then there's the list that the online status can give you. Then there is a list that, you know, the MVPs will give you that is only measured by age, how much you make, and your gender.
So that's not a lot of factors.
Yeah, that
I'm
one is not a lot of factors, which that
there,
one isn't.
There aren't a lot. What do
I'm
you
sorry.
Consider a lot of factors? What number is a lot of factors for you?
There's too many measures. There's too many scales. So that this is not a real number.
Yes, it is.
How is it when you can get 3 different numbers?
You can get multiple different numbers, but they're going to be all the same range by how many factors you get. Like, it's like Dr. Guy said, it's just like getting your house appraised. You can go get four different appraisals, but the numbers are going to be in the relative same ballpark.
Well, you can give
yourself
the
same comparables. Yeah, that's the problem. People give themselves tens when they're not tens to everyone else. Like, they're trapped in their own reality, which seems is how you're perceiving these things, and that's part of the problem that leads into dating problems is people are not cognizant and aware of what their true value is. It's generally overstated or sometimes even understated, but you have to have an accurate interpretation of your physical value, you know, your socioeconomic status, you know, how you dress, and those factors are going to play into who you attract and who's going to like you. So, you know, like we talked about earlier, if, you know, you want a guy who's fit and you over here eating cookies and, you know, not working out, generally that's not going to work. But those people that have that locked in their head think that they deserve this type of caliber individual, which doesn't necessarily support that person nor the habits.
I understand that. But I'm saying if you have three tests and two out of three tests come out to be a very positive number, but your one test comes out to be a lower number, even when you measure those out, you still come out with a very positive number because you have two tests that can come out a huge number.
I need something more specific. You're talking too abstract. I'm not understanding what you're saying.
So you measure yourself a 10. You can skew the online profile system because that we all know.
No, you can't.
Skew an online profile. Oh, yeah, you really can. You can lie.
No, you can't.
That people do it every day. Yes, you can. Yeah, you can. Women do it all the time.
Men
do it all the time.
Stacey J, they got a question for you. Got a question for you, right? So
sure.
I'm following you. If you're rating yourself a 10, right, and you say two of the values are positive and one is negative, let's just, because Steve said that's too abstract, so just let's make it concrete. Of the three measurements, what are you including in those measurements that is going to say that qualifies a 10?
I'll lie about my education.
Okay, but I'm not talking about, no, I'm not saying you're lying.
I'm saying I can lie online. I can't, for the online measurements where they're saying, if these people like you and then they come back and you like them, then that gives you a set number of your scale of MVP.
Well, that was just that one study by that sociologist that you're talking about, the online dating scale. But I'm talking about in general, as we talk about sexual market value, that was just her one. She used online dating. That was just her. But overall, like I said, they have been talking about sexual market value in the literature, online, for at least about the last 10 years. And so a couple years ago, we did a show, and we talked about do women get more or less attractive as they age? And then we did the same show for men. And across the board, the thinking is as women grow older, they become less attractive. As men grow older, they become more attractive. And so that concept really ties into this sexual market value, that I can think I'm a 10. I'm in this game. I'm 45. I'm killing it in my career. I'm physically fit. I consider myself attractive. I consider myself educated, right? But what they're saying is the reality is I can think that all day long, but I'm giving myself a 10, but the masses of men might say, you good for 45, but you have missed your peak to be a 10 because you are 45. So the peak time is for these 25-year-olds that are obviously, you know, things haven't gone south yet. They may be more physically fit.
So we are.
Yes, age is a part. Absolutely. Age
is the main part, right?
Sexual market value.
Okay.
Yes.
So when we're saying
you're establishing what your sexual market value is. But when you can tell me you're 25, but when I look at your hands and your bra come off, I know you're lying.
Oh, your bra can come off and you will never know. But that's another story.
Oh, no. I'm a connoisseur. I know.
Okay, good connoisseur. Dubrow can come out and you will never know. Anywho. We're not going there.
So he's talking about brand new perky breasts. Not I just bought the breasts and they look real perky
right.
now. There's a big difference between our 25
year olds
and our 45
surgery.
There's no lie about this. 25 year olds
are getting surgery.
It don't matter. It don't, Stacey J, hands down, I know at 25 I was rocking them. At 45, I still believe I'm rocking them, but I'm rocking a little bit lower now. And that is just a reality.
Are feeling the pressure to get surgery. So that doesn't
We're not talking
anymore.
About them feeling the pressure to get the surgery. What we're talking about is things
they're
stood up by
the
themselves in their 20s that don't stand up by themselves in their 40s. They just don't.
Oh, no. And, it's not about standing up. It's about looking a certain way. So we are talking about this injury.
Well, what I'm talking about is it don't matter what you do to your breasts. When I look at your hands and they look like you've been working next to Harry Tubman, I know.
Oh, wow. No, my hands don't look like that, but okay. Anywho.
Well, we're not talking about you specifically. We're talking about
Well, you
general.
Actually are.
Right, we're
you
talking
actually
about general.
Are because
we're just
you're
talking
about
general.
In, no, that's not generalized. Because, see, when we're generalizing, you're generalizing a whole lot of people that you're saying, they all people who are in this age limit.
You just
limit
always want to
make
an exception to the rule.
No,
I'm
we're
not looking for an exception to the rule.
We're not saying
I've been
all.
On plenty of days. I don't see them slave your hands before. You know, I don't see the slave for your hands. I don't see the scars for the surgery. Like, I'm really out here. Like, I know what I'm talking about.
You guys, I just want to let all of our listeners know who are just tuning in. This is Dr. Guy's Gumbo Talk. You are listening to myself, Dr. Guy, Steve, and Stacey Jade. And tonight we are discussing, do you know your sexual market value? For those of you that may want to comment or join the discussion, you can call in at 914, if you're listening online, 205-5902, and press 1 if you would like to join in our discussion tonight. Sorry about
that,
guys.
And I think we go back to what you were saying earlier, Stacey Jade, about lying on these profiles. You can lie, and that was speaking to what I was saying earlier about your sexual market face value isn't who you can attract, it's who you can keep. Now, you can tell these lies, but that's not going to necessarily necessitate you keeping these people. It may get you interactions, but eventually there's going to be something about you that, you know, is a little off and they pick up on it and you're not going to be able to keep these people.
You guys, when we talk about, again, how do you measure your sexual market value, it's not just about age. They also talked about how women in their 20s, they have less baggage. For example, maybe they haven't been married yet, they don't have any kids, versus the woman in her 40s may have been married, divorced, has kids now, she comes with more baggage. So that goes into measuring sexual market value as well. So it's not just age that they talk about, but they also talk about some other factors, again, like lifestyle and what they're bringing to the table as well.
Right, I remember we had discussed this. The one gentleman that had the scale about single mothers and, you know, it had rated some women negative, which I was found real surprising. But, you know, everybody's scale is just a little different. But you still have the general idea on, you know, how to derive some of these scores. Like, it's going to be very difficult for, you know, a single mother, you know, with three kids to date a single guy who's a millionaire. Not saying it doesn't happen, but, you know, that may not necessarily be a realistic goal.
You guys, I am going to go to the phone line because it looks like we have a caller with a question or a comment. The last four numbers are, let's see, 9094. You're on the air.
Hello. My name is Tanya. And I have been listening. Well, hello. Oh, goodness, there's so much going through my mind. First of all, while you all were talking, I was trying to do a little quick research on the sexual market value. And a lot of this, and I don't know my audience, but it seems from a Caucasian perspective. So when I look at this, the breakdown of response and measurement, a lot of this, at least what's online, is coming from a male point of view. Then, on top of that, you guys talked about, goodness, I think you said that women peak in their 20s and men peak later. Now, that is totally contrary to what I've understood in the past, because they usually say women peak in their later days.
Oh, not their sexual peak. Women peak later than men. We're talking about peaking as far as higher value on the sexual market scale.
Ah, okay. Thank you for clearing that.
Yeah, so
up.
You're correct. Women peak later, men peak earlier sexually, but as far as their rateability, women are peaking higher in their 20s towards the 10 scale versus women later on in life.
Ah, so okay. So when I hear market value, so I'm kind of thinking that the title is superficial, but it's misleading. So when you look at how people perceive movie stars, and you guys talked about this earlier, versus, let's say, reporters. If you're looking at how they are perceived in a public eye, people want to see more mature women giving you news because they think that the value of somebody with knowledge behind them, and men too. But when you're looking at the youth, who don't see anything else but they're thinking with the waist and below, then that's a whole different concept. So when you're looking at you trying to say, who am I going to connect with, now you're talking not necessarily sexual market value in the sense of there being a long-term, like, educational market value, but more of a mating market value. So that's what I'm hearing that we're looking at. You guys are looking at mating market value, because the youth, they look for the, as Steve was saying, big breast, big butt, and that is actual scientific, that becomes attractive, and vice versa. So I think when I'm thinking of the title and what we're actually talking about is scientifically, hereditatively, we look at certain characteristics for mating value, not necessarily just flirting and next level and superficial stuff. So in that case, now that I understand, I agree with you, and we have just brought up the name from the mating value to sexual value marketplace. Am I correct?
Yes, Ty. Correct. And that's what, thank you so much for making that statement. And that's what I was saying. We talked about this years ago on the show, but we didn't call it sexual market value then. We were describing just the experience of people valuing youth in our society and not necessarily valuing the more seasoned female. But the flip side of it was that they felt that there was more attractiveness to the older male. Like, he becomes more distinguished as he ages. For example, if a male, you know, starts to gray, women will say, oh, he's just so distinguished. But when a woman starts to gray, they're like, oh my gosh, she's getting up there. She needs to go color that. So there's this difference in what society says is acceptable for women and men as they age.
Well, I think what Tanya is speaking of is, we touched on this, you know, like you said a while back, is it's referred to with Da Vinci, the golden ratios, your hips to your waist for women, and for men it's your shoulders to your waist. And that's why we celebrate Marilyn Monroe, who was 36, 22, 36. So that's one of the things that we're kind of speaking of, is it's easier for women to have those ratios as they're younger, and it takes men a little bit more longer to develop that muscle tone if that's what they're into or what they're doing. So with that being said, it's not that there isn't a value for women in that capacity. It's just looked at differently. And just by the way, Tanya, I don't even look at the news, so I don't care if it's a woman or a man. I'm reading it myself anyway. So
you guys something that was very interesting, because You guys put into there a calculation. You guys started talking, you know, you can actually put definitive numbers into rating oneself. And when you start, and I found this really interesting, when you started putting the breakdown, age, face, race, you know, the height, the body type, fitness, the style that you're wearing,
right.
You know, the financial background. When you start doing that, this, we're just talking about becoming a what do you call a dating app? Because it's becoming
absolutely.
There's more in the game than just, you know, now you're saying, okay, you're cute, but can you take care of me? You know, you're cute,
right.
But are you healthy? So that's the twist that I see in this conversation. And I think the other lady that was speaking earlier was saying, you know, hey, you can't put a number on this. And she's right, because, you know, I'm 50, but I still get the eye of much younger men. And I have to say no, because I have my own self-worth. But the idea that what we look at and how we see
you don't
want to
be a cougar.
Huh?
Well, I mean, I think what's interesting
you don't
is it
be
kind
a
of speaks to what
girl,
you were
you
saying
know
earlier.
I'm dating people the same age as my son? Absolutely not.
Well, Tanya, let me ask you this real quickly. I think you kind of touched on what we were saying relative to the sexual marketplace value as it relates to being healthy and successful. Like, say, for instance, for a male who's a little older, it's easier and assumed that a younger woman is going to be healthier, as well as not necessarily need the same amount of resources to be taken care of, or might be a little bit more open to being guided down a path, whereas someone who's a little bit more seasoned or stable in their career might be a little bit more hesitant to follow. So I think those are some of the characteristics that are kind of spoken of in these surveys as well. And truly, a lot of this is coming from a male perspective, because I think what ends up happening, and Dr. Guy and I have talked about this a lot, there is a consensus a lot of times within women about what men should be doing or what they are doing that is not accurate. And there's also a consensus among men about what women do that you don't tell your girlfriends about. So, I mean, I think it's real interesting for us to have a real frank conversation. And even, you know, Dr. Guy and I have kind of gone through some of these scenarios in my life where my sexual marketplace value may have been increased because I was dating one person who may be in a sorority. So then that might have caught the eye of another person in a sorority.
The best sorority.
And I may have been dating multiple people in the sorority, but nobody wanted to tell anybody. But it was only because of the first person who initially had the attraction for me. So, you know,
okay,
women don't want anybody that doesn't want to be wanted. Like, in order for a man to have sexual marketplace value, he has to be wanted by a woman within that sphere or circle. Like,
right.
Generally speaking, from my
men
experience, when I'm
desirable.
An attractive woman, right, when I'm an attractive woman, I get more attractive women. When I'm an ugly woman, nobody will pay me no attention.
Right. So that's one way to increase your sexual market value as a male, is to date attractive women. We do have one of our listeners wanted to comment early on what we said, and the listener says, I'm confused when I think of sexual market value. I'm not only looking at the physical variables like age, looks, fitness. However, the sexual market value includes things like confidence, charm, intelligence, and economic status, which can be more important. So thank you, listener, for that comment. I totally agree with you, and I think Stacey J would definitely agree with you that those are definitely values that are more important. And I'm going to throw this question out, and Tanya, if you want to stay on with us, please feel free to do so, because I want to ask this question to everyone that's on and anybody else that want to chime in. But one of the things that kept coming up about this sexual market value was the comment that women become less desirable the more educated that they become, whereas men become more desirable the more educated they become.
I agree.
Woo! Oh, Lord. That was me falling off my chair.
I'm just saying, that's what has been put out there, that women become less desirable the more educated she becomes. In fact, a bachelor's level is enough, and men become more desirable the more degrees they obtain.
That is coming from weak men who can't handle a strong, educated woman.
Those are a lot. Like, and I just have to speak on the male community. Like, Tanya, when you say those words, those trigger us as much as they trigger you. Like, you know, and I always tease Dr. Guy about this when I, you know, talk about strong women. Like, I'm not here to wrestle you. I don't want to wield abuse. Like, you know, I don't have time to deal with strong women. Like, you can stay in the zoo with the strong women stuff. So it's not that I'm weak. It's just the amount of energy and effort that I'm going to put into a given situation, which a lot of times is magnified, or it may be just not something I feel like dealing with because there are so many other dragons that I have to face. That, you know, I don't want to come home and have to face a strong dragon. So,
but
you know,
you
for
have,
my
you
friends
okay
and
females have to go through the same on the other side. As you said before, with your multiple dating experiences,
right.
For women to put up with men's stuff, but yet a man doesn't want to put up. How is that okay?
Well,
how are you going to?
Well, I'm not saying it's okay. I'm not saying it's okay. I'm not going to say it's right. Tall people can reach the stuff on the shelf easier than short people. Life just is not fair. I mean, these are just some of the things that you deal with in terms of how God works things. You know, women are generally more fertile when they're younger, and they, you know, not right now. You know, people are focusing on their education, so there's a little disparity in those things. So speaking for the men that I know, it's not necessarily a thing about who's strong and who's weak. It's a lot of times when we run into these particular individuals, it's they're stubborn, they're jaded, and it just is a lot of work that they need to do independently before they're able to have a successful relationship that you don't necessarily have to factor in a lot of times with people with, you know, less education or younger.
I was going to say, how do
you
correlate that to a degree? Because that's everybody across, with or without a degree. You have difficult women, you have difficult men. You have high maintenance men, think that you're seen by everybody, and you have women that, you know, the same. So how do you correlate that to having a degree or a higher education? The only thing I can see differently is women who have more education put up with less stuff.
No. Well, generally what happens, since education is a masculine principle, then what you find is a lot of times the women that are more highly educated are generally more masculine than feminine.
Ooh, I don't.
You guys,
that.
I'm going to go. Tanya, you can stay on with us because I'm going to go to the phone lines, and it looks like someone has either a comment for us or a question. So let's see, the last four of your number is 0718. You are on the air.
Good evening. Hello. How are you? Yes.
Hi. Can I have your name, please?
Malik.
Hi, Malik.
How are you?
I'm good.
I've been listening.
What would you like to add to our discussion?
Yeah. that last comment, the question you asked about the educated
women.
Women
become less desirable the more degrees they obtain. Men become more desirable the more degrees they obtain. And Tanya said that's probably an insecure man.
Well, I'm not going to get into names. I'm not going to get into name calling or bashing of men or women like that. I'm not going to get into that because I don't know all men, so I can't say if they're insecure or not. But what I will say, I do not agree with that statement that women become less desirable. I'm thinking of personally. I don't want anyone that I have to I have to educate. So it's like I do know that me having my education do make me a little bit more desirable, but I want someone who I can communicate with, not someone that I have to educate, not someone I have to dumb things down for. Let me make one more comment, then you get the question, but the young man who said that the women become more difficult. I don't know how he's equating that with education because, you know, that's not, you know, usually the correlation with education as far as, I'm lost, but.
Well, Malika, is your dating experience, and I have mine as well, so they can diverge, and we both can be correct.
Like I said, I'm not here to name call or anything like that. But I just don't understand that at all, because it's like the young lady was saying, it's across the board. It really has no correlation with education. Is that person's personality?
You know what? So Malik, here, I have a question, and I always have to go back, because Steve and I have these conversations off air all the time. And when it comes to dating women, he will always say, I have dated more women than you. And he's correct, since my dating of women is zero, but I am a woman. So one of the questions, the conversation that we have talked about, is that when women are dating, one of the things, and I'm one of those women, I would say, I value obtaining a PhD. Like, that was important to me. And when I obtained the PhD, I was just like on cloud nine. I'm like, you can't tell me nothing. This is Dr. God. Now, granted, that was 12 years ago, and it has changed since then. But I think there was some possible arrogance that came with that. There were some demeanors that were probably not the best that came along with obtaining such a high degree that I just felt like, couldn't nobody tell me nothing? Like, what I don't do is manual labor. But you probably could have said, let me show you how to do it. And I'm like, well, I got a PhD. Let me show you how to do it. And so I'm not saying that's for every educated woman, but I do think when we become more educated, we become more self-sufficient, we look and present in a very confident way, and sometimes that is not always perceived well by all men.
Okay. Well, the ladies I know that have a PhD, right? Well, let me first say this. Anybody I know to have a PhD has a bit of narcissism in them anyway, because they decided to go for their PhD.
True.
So it's like, that's anybody. So anybody who goes for their PhD, in a sense, have a bit of narcissism and grandiosity about themselves because they decided to go for their PhD.
True, but
now,
why, as a man, though, why would you want to date someone who comes with that attitude when you can date someone who doesn't, per se?
You generalize that all women with the PhD had an attitude.
No,
as far as you can't tell me nothing.
Malik, let me.
Can I?
Sure. Go ahead.
So the thing about it is this. I think that a woman who has her PhD is so appealing, because she already have – one of the things that attract me to women is their confidence. So she's going to have an air of confidence about her. So that's the thing that's going to attract me to a woman. See, I'm secure in myself to where it's like, I'm not going to be intimidated by anybody who have a PhD or a master's degree or MD, because I have an equal degree. But I don't want someone to have a GED. I don't want someone to have a GED because I'm not going to be able to communicate with them.
Are you finished now, Mr. Malik? May I make my comment, sir?
You can make your comment. It's your show.
Oh, no. I'm the co-host, you know. So I think there's a difference when we speak about just the narcissism. You know, and I teased Dr. Guy about this from working on Bourbon Street. You can be a stripper and there's a degree of narcissism to get on a pole and shake your behind and get money from men, but it may be done in a feminine manner. We're not necessarily talking about the narcissism. What we're talking about is a more masculine attitude. You know, I've dated doctors, lawyers, hung out with a princess, you know, who've been a lot more feminine than some of these women that we're talking about who rely on their self-worth through their degrees. Like, my experience has been a lot of times there are a lot of educated fools. You know, they may put their self-worth because they have a PhD or they have whatever degree, but, you know, they may be less competent than somebody I've run across with a GED. So I think what we may be speaking to is maybe just the narcissism and false sense of confidence. You know, possibly that's it as well.
I just want to respond to two things. Can I just say, feminine personalities versus masculine personalities has nothing to do with education. How you're born and how you react to anything is based on who you are as a person. And I would even go to Flores to say as having a PhD, it depends on the personality and how they respond. It's just like getting a basketball scholarship or planning it. If you let it go to your head, it will go to your head until somebody knocks you down. There's some people who are not fazed by it because that's just a stepping stone on their journey. Now, as far as women go, there are women who are definitely, you know, more feminine, and there's more people who are I don't even want to say masculine, but who portray themselves as more, you know,
personality type.
Right.
Can I ask a question
real quick? What's the definition of feminine and masculine? Because if I've heard correct, he equated a stripper with being more feminine,
right,
than someone, a doctor or lawyer. So if she's in the club,
what I said was she can be just as narcissistic. I didn't say she was more feminine.
Right.
Like, so when we were equating a PhD with being narcissistic, I was giving you another example of narcissism.
Never mind.
You use that example as who you have dated in the past and how that they have been feminine versus masculine. And that was where you went from the education to the pole.
Well, what I'm saying relative to my dating experiences is feminine women tend to be a little bit more, gosh, what's a good word? They tend to lead by questions and not necessarily tell you or try to rule you by logic or use shaming language. Like, you know.
You're saying that they're more subdued.
No, I'm not saying they're more subdued. I think it's just a different approach. Like, say, for instance, when we talk about, you know, even in culture, when we talk about a lot of the memes, you know, you're not a real man unless you do X, Y, Z. Like, it's just a lot of different tactics that come from a little bit more of a masculine perspective than a feminine perspective. That's all. And
you
I stand by that, generally speaking.
I'm sorry, Steve. I was just going to say it's interesting that we kind of started off talking about how does one measure sexual market value, or at least what is sexual market value, and whether we agree, disagree, or not. And then when I posed the question about education, it hit a sore spot for so many people. And for me, I know when I first read it, the first time I was offended. Because I'm one of those women who identifies as being an educated woman, but then I see this literature that is saying the more education you obtain, the less attractive you become. But then I remember when we talked about a couple weeks ago how to date online and create your profile, and one of the things that Steve said is not all men, because we can't speak for all men, but the things that women were posting on their bios weren't necessarily important to men, like the fact that you might be an attorney or a doctor, or, you know, you might be in your career making six figures based on, you know, whatever this particular degree is. And Steve was like, men really don't care about that. Like, when women are looking at mates, these are things that they believe have value and substance for them, but it's not necessarily the same. And so I'm wondering, does it depend on, like, maybe your profession? Does it depend on maybe what type of degree you have obtained? I'm just curious, because that seems to hit a sore spot quickly.
From the way I would interpret it, my understanding of mate selections, generally, not all the time, generally women look for someone who's going to be a protector and provider.
Uh-huh,
and
absolutely.
men look for a trophy.
Absolutely.
Generally.
I agree.
That's kind of when we go back about men being success pieces and women being sexual objects.
Is that when a man sees a woman who has an advanced degree it brings out insecurities in some men on what can I really do for her. What am I going to be able to contribute to the relationship? So it's mm-hmm. not that they become, it becomes the fact that it becomes harder for her to find someone of equal yoke. Because a
Absolutely.
Lot of times a woman get a degree,
Absolutely.
They don't want to date down. So the thing is
I
that
totally
it's not because, right, so the thing is that I don't interpret that she don't become, she becomes less desirable. It's harder for her to find a mate that's equal or higher than her. Because usually women look mm-hmm. for someone who's going to protect and provide. And the way society constructed is they got to be of equal to you. But you see,
doesn't that make her less desirable to the men below her?
No, it makes her dating pool less because she's constructing her mind in order for her to date someone, they have to have a PhD or a master's degree, when that person could be a carpenter.
Right. So I'm still saying if by getting her education, her dating pool shrinks, then therefore
it seems that she's
going to be less desirable. The men who might be carpenters may not want to deal with her.
But her dating pool shrinks because of her perception. Her
perception shrinks. So she will cut her
dating pool down.
Not the man will cut her dating pool down. Because the thing about it is, I have the biggest crush in the world on Lupita Nyong'o. And the thing is, if she doesn't give me a chance, that doesn't make it that she's not desirable. That just makes it to where she's cut her dating pool down to where it's like, I'm only dating actors.
Well, I think there's a difference between Lupita Longo and somebody with an advanced level degree. I think that's a little bit of a hybrid. Can I get in? Let Tanya go,
because we only have a few minutes left, and I definitely want her to get her comment in.
You guys have just now made this conversation worthwhile. Now we're looking at maximizing our sexual market value, because now you guys are talking about what is real and putting aside that the vague number and all that kind of stuff. For people that have education, we look at market value differently. And not every MBA, PhD female is going to look up and say, you know, save me or, you know, have somebody up there. But now we're looking at, I don't need you to save me. I need you to be compatible with me. I need an equal, not necessarily financially, but someone that I can talk to, like the gentleman said before. That's when conversation becomes key. Like-mindedness becomes key. So I'll leave it there. Now we have really tapped into the sexual market value.
So, Tanya, this is for you and Malik, actually. I just want to piggyback on what you guys are saying because I was at a taught at Chicago State. This was 2005, around that time. And so while I was there, I worked on a research project that looked at why aren't African-American men and women getting married? And from that study, what came out was that men across the board said they wanted to be needed. And the study took place in multiple states and with men and women focus groups. And the very same thing that you guys are mentioning is that men said, I just want to be needed, right? I want to feel like I can provide for the person I'm with. And on the other side, African-American women, specifically because it was only a group for African-American women and men, women said, I don't need a man. Like, that was what reigned from our female groups. And so it's interesting that Malik says women look for financial stability and support, and men are looking to provide that. But yet that doesn't always – it's not always communicated. And so I think when we throw in the higher degree, obviously people typically go for higher degrees to obtain more financial success, or they're just really passionate about that field. So if these women are obtaining this financial success, in essence, what comes across is that I don't need a man. I pay my own bills. I own my own house. What do I need him for? Now, I'm not saying this is my opinion. I'm just saying this was the comments that were presented in the study. And, again, these were in at least five different states, from Jersey to New Orleans and states in between, where that seemed to be the verbiage that was communicated.
Can I jump in real quick on this? I have read those studies, and I can actually put some coordination into all this. Women, historically, black women, have had to take care of themselves for so long. And we can go back all the way to slavery with the destruction of the family,
mm-hmm.
that self-reliance became a call to action, not because of necessity. I mean, not because we wanted it, because out of necessity. And so men, on the other hand, who, were doing their own thing, had to do what they had to do. It's harder for men now to come to black women to say, you know what, stop. You don't have to. And that's the difference. Black women need to say, yes, I don't have to, because you're there, but I want you to know that I can. So it's communication. We're all saying the same thing. Black men want to be wanted. Black women, want to be needed. Black women need black men, but they don't want to come off vulnerable. So it's harder for a black man to say, I got you, and to prove. See, that's the different step. There's a lot of talk into it, because as the gentleman, the co-host, was saying, I've dated all the way around, and the more I do, the more I'm looked at, the more people like me. The difference is a true, solid female black woman that is looking for a relationship, they're looking for somebody to break through the hard shell and say, yeah, babe, I know you can, so with me by your side, you don't have to. And so a lot of black men don't go that distance. They throw their hands up, like your brother said, next, can't get through to that one, so I'm moving on. And so that, in black women's mind, is saying, prove me right. He wasn't worth the time. And black women want to be pursued. So there is a validity to the idea, I'm just not going to, fall into you just because you said it. You have to prove to it. So I'm done. That's it.
Thank you so much, Tanya. Malik, Steve, Stacey, Jade, you got anything to wrap up in our last couple of minutes in this definitely insightful conversation that we've had tonight?
I apologize for throwing your conversation off track.
It was perfect. You did not throw it off track. We never had a specific destination we wanted to go, which is why we opened up the phone lines. If we wanted to keep our own perspective, we wouldn't be taking callers. So we always appreciate our listeners calling in and contributing to our discussion, because Steve and I and Stacey J, we talk all the time offline. We know what our thoughts are about these particular subjects. We've been reading articles,
right,
to each other, watching videos. Our goal is to really find out what our listeners think about it, but also to talk about topics that everybody isn't necessarily talking about, and kind of disseminate information that maybe you wouldn't otherwise talk about, on a Sunday evening. And so I thank you, Tanya. Thank you for your conversation tonight. Malik, thank you for joining in the conversation tonight. And as always, I thank my co-host, Steve, and Stacey J, for your contribution. I do think whether we agree with this idea behind sexual market value, is it true or not, do we like it, that's the reality. That's kind of where we live, and a lot of people do base their sexual market value and how they engage in relationships on this. And so ideally, I tell everybody, I think each and every person needs to believe they're a 10. I don't care if anybody else believe it or not. Perception is created by our own reality, and you create that because you can trust it. Now, I know Steve will say something completely different, but we're out of time, and he won't have an opportunity to say that. So with that being said.
You tell everybody you created too many monsters. There's some sins that need to be notified.
I don't care. My belief is if you don't toot your own horn, ain't nobody else going to toot it for you. So if you believe
when
you're in
the fast lane,
keep rocking, believe
in
you
right and get out the way.
Again, do what you need to do for you so that you believe that you are that 10. And I'm okay with that, whether how you look, what degree you have, home, car, I don't care about anything that. You believe it, so then it's true. So, you guys, thank you for tuning in tonight. It's been a blast. Don't forget to Facebook it, tweet it, pass it on. Tell family and friends about Dr. Guy Gumbo Talk. And everyone have a blessed night. Thank you guys for listening.
Hey, bye-bye.
See ya.